seen an invitation to Slido. It's a lovely platform that I wanted to use a few times today in our being together. If you didn't see how to join, I'm going to put a joining link in the chat, and then I'll share my screen, which will also have a QR code. So if you need that, you can use that. And the question is, in one word, what wholesome quality or seed would you like to water or nurture in yourself in the coming year? So I'm gonna share my screen, and then you all can fill out this poll, and it'll make a beautiful word cloud. So, do you all see this blue screen? Yeah? Okay, so a number of you have already responded. So it's beautiful to see your words coming in. And of course, in a word cloud, the bigger words mean more people have written that same word. So we have a lot of equanimity and patience, compassion, connection, action, love, healing, authenticity, friendliness, kindness, alignment, resilience, mindfulness, presence, acceptance, empathy, consistency, joy, clarity, simplicity, generosity, resolve, belonging, gratitude, connection, right perception, restraint, focus, openness, sincerity, contemplation, spaciousness, hope, listening, attention, loving kindness, gentleness, fierce vulnerability, trust, energy, alignment, enoughness, beauty, flow. Strength, ground, lovely, lovely. So just take this in for a moment. We could take a few breaths as we just receive this beautiful word cloud of aspiration. What's here in this group? So I will stop sh my share, but you still have access to this. So this can continue to evolve. If you add, those who haven't had a chance may still be adding. Looks like patience now has gotten bigger than equanimity. So we may have, it's shifting here. Okay, thank you so much for participating in that. It's beautiful to see your heart in this way. Some have shared in the chat as well, kindness and honesty, peace, trust, kindness. Yeah, thank you. So, as was mentioned, we'll begin with a meditation. The theme of our gathering today is growing the good moment by moment. So I'll offer a meditation and then some reflections on this theme. Also, as a way to give you a sense, if you're thinking about the course that starts next Sunday, what it's about. But even if you're not planning to do the course, this will offer some practice that I hope will be helpful to everyone. And then the last third of our time together will be for your questions, your reflections. So the meditation I want to offer us is about cultivating the beautiful qualities in our mind. There are potentialities in each of our consciousness that need to be cultivated consciously in order to grow, in order to strengthen. And there's a word in Pali and Sanskrit, it's bhavana, which means cultivation. And it's also the same word that's used for meditation and contemplation, because when we meditate, we're cultivating the seeds, the potential in our mind. We're helping it to grow. So each one of us carries within us beautiful, wholesome qualities that we can always be in touch with when we need them. And in this meditation, we'll explore four of these wholesome states, which have been very supportive for me in my practice to reflect on and to nourish. And these four were taught by my teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh, or Thầy in Vietnamese, which means teacher. And they are freshness, first one, freshness, stability, calm, and freedom. So you might be familiar with these four as a pebble meditation that we share with children, and also a song that I'll share with you at the end that helps us remember these four qualities in song. So these four wholesome qualities are always there in us, but we may get busy or distracted in our lives. And so these aspects in us might be yearning for our attention. They might be waiting for us to call them up consciously to be cultivated. So if we don't water or nourish elements in us, then they won't have a chance to come up, right? Just like if we don't water seeds in our garden, they won't have a chance to sprout. So this practice that I'll offer, we can do this consciously and regularly. And it's an invitation to arouse these wholesome mind states. And when they arise in our mind, our life becomes beautiful, right? If we have a fresh mind, an open mind, a calm and stable mind and heart, and a mind and heart that's free, what more do we need? Right? So that's the invitation. So I invite you to settle into your body in whatever position is supportive for you. It might be seated, it might be lying down, it might be standing. Just check in with your body and see what is good for you today. And you can have your eyes open or closed or half open with a gentle gaze at one point. And feel your breath. Feel the in-breath flowing in. Feel the out-breath flowing out. And if it feels comfortable, you could take three of the deepest breaths you've taken all day. A deep inhale into the belly. And a long, slow exhale, releasing all the air from your abdomen, lungs. And two more like that if it's comfortable. And letting your breath return to its natural rhythm. Settling back, noticing the environment, the place that you're in, the sounds around you, the quality of the light. The energetic sense of the space that you're in. Noticing sensations in your body. And if there's any adjustment your body wants to make to feel more comfortable, to release tension. Just allow yourself to make those adjustments. Opening to what's here in your body and mind. As much as you can with acceptance and kindness. Allowing ourselves to simply be just as we are. And now we'll open to the first wholesome quality of freshness. So consciously call up the mind state of freshness, this ability we each have to see each moment as new and unique. Each breath is precious. This in-breath has never happened before. This out-breath will never happen again. Each second is new and unrepeatable. Freshness can be like looking with the eyes of a child at your experience with a kind of wonder and awe. I'm still alive. My heart is beating in my chest. My heart is a miracle. So steady. So much intelligence in my body, keeping me alive moment to moment. energy of freshness allows us to see each moment as the opening of a flower. And when we call up this freshness, we become a kind of human flower with a capacity to offer beauty and joy to ourselves and to others. Thich Nhat Hanh would often say that the Buddha is our freshness. Our sense of gratitude and creativity and generosity and openness. The ability to see possibilities. Being curious and interested in our own experience and the world around us, both in our meditation and in our daily life. As you connect with this wonderful state of freshness, see what it is you wish to offer to the world around you, just as a flower offers fragrance and color and beauty. What is yours to offer? Now we open to the second quality of solidity. Stability. Letting yourself connect with this capacity of strength inside of you. A powerfulness like a mountain. And you could visualize a mountain, or maybe there's a mountain nearby that you could look at. We each have the ability to remain steady and unwavering, even in the face of challenges. And we can develop this capacity for stillness, for stability, for focus and magnanimity by stopping and checking in with ourselves as we're doing now, breathing, feeling the solidity of our posture. Feeling the weight of our body, the strength of our bones. We can also call up the energy of solidity by remembering times in our lives when we have been trustworthy, dependable, when we have offered friendship or refuge to others. Take a few moments now to breathe with the energy of stability within you, reflecting on how you want to offer this energy of stillness, of strength, of presence to yourself or to the world around you. This energy of resolve, of determination. It's a gift that the world needs. Now we call up the third quality of calm, of peace. We can visualize a quiet forest pool, the surface of the pool is very still, and we can experience the same tranquility inside of us. Simply opening the door to the possibility of this tranquility that can always grow and deepen in us. It's possible for us to connect with the reality of quietude, peace, undisturbed, unruffled clarity in us. And we can grow this ability every time we call up this seed in us. Being a calm, still lake. Let yourself rest with this stillness. Reflecting on how you want to offer this to yourself or to others to grow this capacity for calm and clarity. Every time we allow the mind to come to stillness, to allow our emotions to be seen, received, held, we can see things with clarity and respond to the world around us appropriately because our mind is clear and not distorted. Finally, we cultivate the quality of freedom that each of us has inside of us. When you picture the vast open sky with no obstruction, full of space. Like the stars twinkling in the night sky, so vast. That same vastness is inside of us. Like a moon floating in the night sky on a cloudless night. We too have infinite space within us. When we touch the space, we touch freedom. Unlimited freedom. Breathing and offering yourself the space. Breathing and resting into this freedom. We can learn to give ourselves and others space to be who we are without expectations or projections. This offering of space and freedom is the most precious gift. Connect with how you might like to offer yourself and others this gift of space and freedom. Now come back to reconnect with your body and your breath. Checking in with yourself to notice what's alive in you as we bring our practice to a close. Thank you for your practice, dear Sangha. So I'll offer some reflections on the topic. Yes, feel free to move and stretch after sitting for some time. Move in whatever way your body would like to have some movement. Yeah. Thank you for your reflections on the meditation. So this meditation, bringing up the qualities of freshness, solidity, calm, freedom. For me, it's a beautiful reminder that our minds are naturally radiant. And I'll play a song for you at the end, a Plum Village song, where we sing, breathing in, breathing out. I am free. I am free. I am free. And that's true already. It's not in the future. So if we think of a flower, a flower doesn't struggle to be fresh, right? It just opens. It offers its freshness. So the practice helps us to see that we're already free right here, right now, in this breath, in this step. And this is from the Pali Canon, the Buddha says, the mind, practitioners, is luminous, but it is defiled by incoming defilements. So defilements are not inherent, they are incoming, they're visitors, right? The mind's natural state is radiant. These four qualities, that's the natural state of the mind. We don't have to go out and get that outside of us, right? There's this inherent spaciousness in us. This, the nature of our consciousness is boundless. It's pretty amazing when you connect with that. We can sometimes get so narrow in our minds, right? So tight. But our true nature, our consciousness has no limits. That's what this meditation helps us to touch. The mind is actually as vast as space. And this was a meditation the Buddha taught, to see our minds like space, to touch as the element of space, which has no limit. And if your mind is touching space, which has no limit, that means your consciousness is without limit. Right? How can you be aware of it if it's also without limit? It must also be that vast if you can know space and boundless space. Stephen Charleston, a member of the Choctaw Nation. He served as Episcopal Bishop of Alaska. He's an activist, professor, and theologian. And he wrote, "We survived the end of the world. Lessons from Native America on apocalypse and hope." And in it, he says, "Part of the egalitarian nature of traditional Native American cultures is this recognition that spiritual vision is accessible to all people, not only to a few. That is a critical thing to understand. If we are feeling powerless against reality around us, the concept of a vision quest opens a door to us. It shows us how to tap into a deeper strength and a more focused response. The beginning of resignation is the idea that our perception of reality is flawed. For example, we are not smart enough, important enough, or holy enough to understand the apocalypse, much less deal with it. The beginning of our spiritual self-confidence is that we have direct access to a power far beyond the limitations of our own perceptions." I'm going to read that sentence again. The beginning of our spiritual self-confidence is that we have direct access to a power far beyond the limitations of our own perceptions. There is a higher power that wants us to participate, wants us to let go of resignation, and will show us how. So for me, this teaching of his also points to the inherent luminosity of our minds, because we can all touch a power far beyond the limitations of our own perceptions. We have access to this, right? What we perceive is not all there is. And when we meditate on the nature of our mind, these wholesome qualities of mind, we begin to see that. Okay, so if the mind is already luminous, why practice? Because a garden, even a fertile garden, still needs care. Even a radiant mind can get tangled in thoughts and emotions that cause suffering. The Zen teacher Shunryu Suzuki said, "Gaining enlightenment is an accident. Spiritual practice simply makes us accident prone." So the question becomes, how do we make ourselves more accident prone for wisdom? So that we can remember this luminosity that is at our core, that is the ground of our being. So, how do we become good gardeners of our mind to do this cultivation, this work of bhavana, right? And so, this is where the four wise efforts come in. And this is the focus of this course that starts next week. So wise effort is one of the eight elements of the Eightfold Path. We need wise effort to go on this path of transforming our hearts and minds. And the Buddha explained that there are four elements of wise effort, four ways to cultivate it. One is to prevent the arising of unwholesome states that haven't yet arisen, right? And two is to abandon unwholesome states that have already arisen. We could also talk about that as transforming suffering once it's in our mind stream. The third is to arouse wholesome states that have not yet arisen. Maybe that's what we were doing in the meditation, if those states were not already there. And fourth is to maintain and perfect, to deepen the wholesome states that have already arisen. So that's also, you could say, what we were doing in the meditation, because maybe once we called it up, we kept reflecting on it, we kept developing dwelling in it, and that was a way to keep that wholesome state alive in our mind. So, in everyday life, we could see this as the first element of wise effort would be not feeding anger or resentment in difficult conversations. Right? If we notice something could arise that would not be helpful for ourselves or others, and we do whatever we can not to give it space to arise. So if we're starting to get irritated in a conversation, we might say, I'm not feeling very fresh right now. I'm not feeling very stable. Could we continue this conversation in a little bit when I have calmed down or when the tension here is settled? And the second part of wise effort in daily life might be when frustration or sadness arises, anger or loneliness, to turn to it with curiosity, with patience, with self-compassion, with care. To say, oh, I see you here. I want to care for you. I want to be present for you and learn. So we don't allow that unwholesome mind state to be by itself. We bring along mindfulness. We bring along compassion to meet that difficult mind state, that painful emotion. And the third aspect of wise effort to bring up wholesome states when they haven't yet arisen could be to nurture kindness, joy, courage in small daily moments. Maybe it means raising your voice to say something when something needs to be said that might not be so easy to say, whether it's interpersonally or in society. Maybe it's expressing your gratitude, expressing your appreciation. Maybe it's bringing up the energy of mindfulness, taking one moment every day, something you do every day, like drinking tea or taking the elevator or riding your bike or looking out the window, choosing one moment and doing that activity in mindfulness every day. Really bringing your awareness to whatever that activity is that you've chosen, even just a few moments every day. And then the fourth element of wise effort in daily life could look like supporting goodness and clarity in ourselves, in others. If you see someone doing something, or even yourself, that is wholesome, you could rejoice in that. You could encourage that in them. You could celebrate that. Or if you notice a wholesome mind state arose or something beautiful happened during the day, before bed, you could journal about it. It brings that emotion, that mind state back up, and you get to kind of marinate in it. And it grows that capacity to see things with loving eyes, with appreciative or caring awareness. You strengthen that every time you bring it up and you maintain it in your mind, right? So I'll just share a slide so you can see all four in one go. Can you see this? Yeah? Okay, thanks. So you can You can list them with the unwholesome ones first or the wholesome ones first. This one lists them the other way, where you bring up the wholesome seeds and then keep them in your mind as long as possible. You marinate in them, and then you don't allow the unwholesome seeds to be watered. And when they do arise, you take care of them so that they will return to the store under the soil, right? Store consciousness, where all these seeds are stored. So that they'll return as soon as possible, so that they don't have a chance to kind of create difficulty for yourself and others. So I just wanted you to see them like this because they're sort of mirror images to each other, right? The first one is about doing something. And the second one is about time, how long you do it. The third one is about not doing something. And then fourth one is we can't control all the things that arise in our minds. Sometimes the environment brings up unwholesome seeds, or sometimes we can't help but bring up unwholesome seeds. But when that happens, again, it's a question of time, right? The fourth and the second one are like, how do we use our time? How long are we cultivating things in our mind? Because the longer something unwholesome is in our mind, the bigger it grows at its root. And the longer something wholesome is in our mind, like activated, where an emotion expresses itself, the bigger it grows at its root. So that's why this is all about cultivation, about being a gardener. Mindfulness is about being a gardener of our minds because we're choosing in every moment what to water, what to give airtime to. And those things are growing or weakening based on those choices, right? And so if your wholesome seeds are growing bigger under the surface, they will express themselves naturally in your daily life without you even trying. Does that make sense? So the bigger those seeds become, the more they express themselves without you even having to do anything. So you're walking down the street and gratitude starts to arise because you've been cultivating it. You didn't even plan on it, but it just arose. You saw something. You felt gratitude, right? And the same is true if we're nourishing the unwholesome seeds. If every day we're giving a lot of airtime to anger and sadness and judgment and bitterness, it's not that we want to suppress those emotions. Nothing is wrong with those emotions. They are human emotions. Everyone has all of the seeds, right? But mindfulness is about recognizing when they're there and taking care of them as soon as possible. If, because you know the difference, right? You know when anger arises and you're not aware of it, you start saying things, you start doing things, or you suppress your anger and you hurt yourself, right? But if right away you notice anger is there, you have many more choices. You can say, oh, let me be with this anger. Let me understand where it came from. What are the roots of this anger? What did this situation that happened that made me angry? How can I be with this skillfully? Right? And that immediately bringing mindfulness to the anger, that does something very different to the seed of anger in the at the root in your consciousness. It actually, when you work with anger skillfully, mindfully, that seed gets smaller. And so then the next time when something happens that would normally make you very angry, you don't get as angry. You get a little bit angry. You're sort of more balanced because you helped that root of anger get smaller by holding it with mindfulness, right? So the time factor is very important in number two and in number four. How long you entertain these things in your mind is what leads to them growing bigger or growing smaller. Okay, I'll stop the share. So, does that make sense how important it is, these four ways of practicing? Because they have everything to do with our happiness, right? We all know people who very little is going wrong and they're very upset, right? You know someone like that? I'm sure it's not you. Right? You know someone that, like, they go on vacation, they complain about everything. But the seeds of suffering in them are very big. They have everything, so many things to be happy about, but they're unhappy, they're angry, they're. But then we probably also know people who have many, many difficulties in their life. Many, maybe health issues or some family tragedies or some difficult things happening around them, and somehow they're quite stable and steady, and they manage to go through their lives seeing the good, even though it might be hard sometimes. And they kind of have this center. You know people like that too? Maybe it's you, right? I know people on this call who I see like that. My dear associate, Dorothy Maguire, someone who's very stable in the midst of so many difficulties, because nourishing all these good, wholesome seeds, right? My dad is on this call. He's also someone who has encountered lots of hardship in his life, and yet there's this steadiness, this stability. Yeah, from nourishing wholesome seeds, that really makes a difference. I can't tell you how important this practice is. And we get to make these choices every single day. This is within our power. That's why mindfulness is so important. Every single moment of our day, we can choose what seeds do we want to have watered. Or even if we can't choose, we can choose our response to the seeds that are getting watered, right? So these four practices help us choose our response to whatever is arising in our minds, right? So this is really what mindfulness offers us, right? These two aspects. Mindfulness helps us to be with the wonders of life, to really see them, to take them in, to enjoy them. And on the other side, mindfulness helps us to embrace our suffering, to be there for our suffering. We can talk about these as two arts, the art of happiness and the art of suffering. You know, suffering is an art. We shouldn't think of suffering as just something to avoid. We can learn to suffer as an art. That's what the Buddha asked us to do. And they both support each other, right? This mindfulness of happiness, mindfulness of suffering. Because when we know how to be nourished by the beauty in us and around us, we can better embrace our suffering. And when we know how to be with our suffering, to care for our suffering mindfully, we can better allow in the beauty of our lives. So they really go together. They're like two sides of the same coin. So suffering and happiness, they inter-are, like my fingers interlocking, right? Moments of difficulty lead us to awakening. So the art of happiness is knowing how to cultivate the good in us. That is not separate from the art of suffering. And my teacher, Tai, would say that a good practitioner, a good spiritual practitioner, is not someone who doesn't suffer. That's not what we're aiming for, to never suffer, because that's not very realistic unless we're awakened. He said, a good practitioner is not someone who doesn't suffer, but someone who knows how to take good care of their suffering. Right? And these four ways of right effort help us to take good care of our suffering. But sometimes when we suffer, we want to get rid of that suffering, right? And we want to numb ourselves. So we might avoid our suffering. We might drink alcohol or drown ourselves in some kind of distraction, watching shows or going on a shopping spree or talking to friends for a long time so we don't have to feel that pain. But neuroscience has found that you can't just numb one part of your brain. If you numb out your suffering, you also cut yourself off from joy. They've seen that in brain study. So we really need to get skilled at each of these aspects of the four efforts, four wise efforts, in order to be healthy, in order to be happy, in order to learn how to be there for our suffering and really enjoy the fullness of our lives, right? Our lives are so short. We really want to put in the time and energy to learn this so we can take full advantage of the preciousness of our lives. And these practices are also very important in helping us maintain our balance and our resilience in our work. Maybe we work for social justice. Maybe we work in a serving profession. Maybe we are working on transforming oppression in the world. We need this kind of care for our mind and our heart to do that well, to show up in the world in a balanced way. So I'm going to stop here and invite us just to take a breath together. And then I'm going to invite us to do a second experience on Slido, which is what are the ways that you grow the good in yourself or in others? So I'll share the link again if you didn't get a chance to enter the Slido, and then I'll share my screen and we'll get to see your responses coming in. And if you need to, you can always take a picture of the QR code and then you can access this question on your phone, or you can also put in on your computer slido.com in your browser and then copy and paste that number on the left lower side. And then you can also answer this that way. So, what are the ways that you grow the good in yourself or in others? And I'll read a few of these out. So, encouragement and appreciation. Loving speech and deep listening, steadiness, nurturance, noticing the good in myself or others, thoughtfulness, positivity, holding space, validation, and I'll go to the new ones, tranquility. Taking in the beauty of nature and animals, consistency, thoughtfulness. And you're seeing up above here that there are a number of ones that are appearing multiple times. So that's also nice to see. Deep listening, being mindful, love, presence, appreciation, going for walks, meditation, being kindly present. breath work, writing poetry, forgiving, pausing, attend, acceptance, forgiveness, compassion, rest, surrender, trust. I'm kind to others. I take care of my emotional needs. Optimism. Greet everyone with a smile every day. Tending to my altar. Deep listening. Taking space. Naming people's strengths and gifts. Paying attention. Doing for and giving to others with love, kindness, empathy, gratitude, and appreciation. Taking care of my home, laugh, not clinging, smiling. Charity work with veterans, endurance, yoga, fourfold breathing. Beautiful. Incline to the positive. Okay, so I will stop my share, but you can continue to see these coming in, taking self-care breaks in the day, paying attention. These are really beautiful. Thank you, thank you. I want to share with you just a little bit about the course as well. You can see it on the website, but just in a brief summary. So each of the 4 Sundays, we're going to go into the one of the 4 efforts, right? So we'll look at what does it mean to not allow unwholesome seeds to arise. That's the first week. Second week, how do we hold them when they arise? So we'll go into more detail with each one each week. And we'll bring in the insights of Buddhist psychology and both the Vipassana insight teachings and the engaged Buddhism, Zen lineage of Master Thich Nhat Hanh. And we'll look at both our personal practice and relational practice and how we can bring our practice into the world, how our inner care can become a kind of meaningful contribution to the suffering in our world as well. So each week we'll have a meditation, a reflection from me, and some exercises if you want to do them. Things like maybe writing a love letter as a way to nurture wholesome seeds, or self-forgiveness as a way to care for difficult experiences in us. And there'll be time for questions, and then there'll be places for you to reflect on online and to learn from each other. You can also have a practice partner, and there'll be guidance for what you might do each week with a practice partner to go deeper into the topics. It's really just going to be a deepening of what we explored today, how we can really tend our inner gardens with skill and love and help to shape the world that we want, right? I think we could all agree we haven't created the world that we want yet. But as we learn to do these practices of the 4 wise efforts, we can learn to create the kind of world we really want to live in. Okay, so let me make space for you to ask questions or or share, you can ask in the chat. And you can also raise your hand and ask a question live, and just an invitation to keep questions brief. We've got about 13 minutes, so could hear from as many people as we can, or take as many questions as we can. So the course meets every Sunday at I think it's 12:30 Eastern time. Twelve thirty to 2 Eastern time, so it's 90 minutes. So that's evening on the in England or Europe, and morning on the west coast of the US. Thank you, dear ones, for your shares in the chat. So Wayne is asking in the chat, how does the mind work in general and its reasons? Thank you, Wayne. That's a big question. I think I would say, the mind very much responds to how it is. It's cultivated, whether from us or from our environment. So, you could think of the mind like water. You know how water will take whatever shape of the container you pour the water in? So, if you have a circular shape, the water will be circular. If you have a long shape, then the water will take that shape. So the mind takes the shape of the way that it's cultivated. So that's why we want to do our best to be conscious about what shape we create for our mind. More to share there, but it's would take a long time, so I hope that's enough of an answer. Kina, how do you not water an unwholesome seed that feels really big and prominent? For me, anxiety surfaces and I do not know how to allow it to consume me all the time. Thank you for this really important question, Kina. I think many people also experience what you're describing. So it's very common and human, especially now as we live in a time that is so uncertain and so disrupted. And this anxiety can come up even more. I think sometimes it can be helpful to not first focus on how to stop an unwholesome seed from arising, but how to strengthen ourselves, how to create resilience so that these seeds don't pull us away and drown us so easily. So maybe one way to respond to you is to one way to work with this energy of anxiety is to look at what really nourishes you each day. What are ways to support grounding? And it might be physically to be moving in a way that's supportive of you, Tai Chi or yoga or Qigong or swimming or dancing or some kind of sports or cardiovascular movement, or it might be art, or it might be walking in nature, but just thinking about what is it that that allows you to really be grounded, to feel like you can touch something that's wholesome, that gets you in touch with resilience. Because we all also have resilience. Even when anxiety is very big, it doesn't mean that the wholesome seeds aren't there. They're just smaller. So we need to get in touch with them to bring the balance back, right? So it could also be reflecting on a time when you were a child where you felt safe, or a different time in your life, or a place where you felt very connected to the life around you, or some animal being, or a tree, or a spiritual teacher, or a protective entity that you call upon regularly to remind you that you have this also. You have this ability to be grounded also. And I would also say that having other people to ground with can be very powerful. So if it's possible for you to be in a group of people that practice, like here on Sundays, or in your daily life where you're in person with people, whether it's singing together, or moving together, meditating together, or some kind of grounding thing you do with others, that can also be very helpful to maintain the balance so that when anxiety arises, it doesn't bowl you over. And lastly, I would also say sometimes, anxiety can be so intense that it's where we go into the realm of needing more support, more therapeutic support. So working with a trauma therapist, sometimes our anxiety is related to trauma, and it can be very hard to work with alone or without a professional. Sometimes medication can be helpful. So you may just need to see, if it's something very disabling for you, then having more support can be helpful. Diana asks, it's a terrifying time in the US. Any thoughts, guidance for working with this significant time? Yes, thank you, Diana. It is terrifying. And I think similar to what I shared with Kina, staying grounded, staying in touch with what helps us to nurture what's wholesome in us and in others. And also taking action. I think that's a big part of it too. That if we can stay balanced, especially with others, to speak up, in whatever way is helpful for us in our lives. Maybe it's writing letters, writing an op-ed. Maybe it's joining, a call with a solidarity group that is resisting what's happening in the US right now. One of the things I've been meditating on is in the spirit of my teacher, who invites us to write love letters to people that are very difficult, that are creating a lot of suffering in the world. It's like, how can I write a love letter to ICE agents? And ICE agents aren't, they're like the tip of the candle, right? There's a whole system that's supporting them. So how do I see them also as part of this larger system, right? So it's like seeing with the eyes of interbeing is what is called for now, so that we don't other human beings, because that's what's at the root of what's brought about this terrifying time, is we've othered each other. into not seeing each other's humanity. So we don't want to do that, even to people who are doing the most atrocious things, right? Because that just perpetuates that. So what does it mean to look with the eyes of interbeing? And a beautiful support at this time can be to reflect on the poem by Thich Nhat Hanh, Please Call Me by My True Names. And also, Kuan Yin's prayer for the, is it for the abuser? Maybe someone can find it and put it in the chat. There's a beautiful prayer to the Bodhisattva of Compassion that is about praying for those who are also perpetrators of harm. Everyone is in need of prayers. Okay, I'll go to Natalie's question. In my experience, unwholesome seeds, for example, anxiety, loneliness, sadness, manifest in the body as physical sensations, usually in the heart space. And I find it so challenging to turn toward these feelings with tenderness and curiosity and not magnify them. Thank you for sharing that, Natalie. And I again think that this is a very common experience. Even a single-celled organism moves away from what's uncomfortable or painful. So we have every right to not want to be with things that are difficult. However, on the spiritual path, that is what leads to liberation. And that's why we practice, so that we can learn to desensitize ourselves little by little to these painful parts of ourselves. Because you notice that it's in the body, Natalie, I would actually encourage you to bring your hands to your heart, or to wherever you notice the physical sensation. And just work with it physically and see if you can give your emotion more physical space. So if you notice it in the heart, see if you can allow it to take up more space in your body, whether it's in your head or in your shoulders or in your abdomen. And don't think of making, friends with it or giving it, trying to care for it. In your mind, think of really working with it in your body. Like, how can you give it more space? If you're interested in the work of, he teaches integral somatic psychotherapy, and it's Raja Selvam. I'll put it in the chat. He has a wonderful book about this where he, it's ISP, where he talks about working with emotions in this physical way to help really make them more manageable. So I would encourage that. Thank you for those who put the links into the chat. So I am so appreciative of this time with you. Maybe I can respond very briefly to Danny's question. What is right in the Eightfold Steps for living on the relative level? So one way I think of that word, I don't always like the word right for the right effort, right view. I like wise, because right implies wrong. Well, you can have wrong view and wrong effort, right? But wise effort, it means really doing things that are beneficial for you and for others, and avoiding things that are unbeneficial for you and for others. And so the Eightfold Path is wise for living on the relative level, because it helps us avoid creating unnecessary suffering for others and for ourselves. And it helps us create well-being for ourselves and for others. So, thank you so much for your time and your practice, your community. It's always a great pleasure to be with you here at Sangha Live. And if you would like to join me next week for this 4-week course, I would love to see you. You can tell your friends, and we'll go deeper. But thank you for your time today, and please take good care of yourselves. Take good care of the precious garden of your hearts. because the world really needs this.